And as I have said so many times before already, we are at the beginning of what is in our edition, chapter 17. I do recognize that in the varying publications, different publishers over time and different editions, these chapter divisions do not all fall in the same place in the text. The text is all there, but there are chapter divisions which differ and vary according to the publishers, the production of the publication. And ours, in the one that we're using for this class here in this congregation, specifically, this old edition, it is chapter 17, entitled The Army of Blood Men. And so, Bunyan begins to write, "Now when the tyrant had arrived at Hellgate Hill, with his old friend Incredulity, they immediately descended the den, and having there with their fellows for a while condoled their misfortune and great loss that they sustained against the town of Mansoul, they fell at length into a passion, and revenged they would be for the loss that they sustained before the town of Mansoul. Wherefore they presently called a council to contrive yet further what was to be done against the famous town of Mansoul." Now, we need only comment there that this warfare for Mansoul never ceases. It never ceases. Mansoul may gain great victories, and Emmanuel may have taken up his place in the castle, which is the heart. And there will still be warfare. When Mansoul is in the hands of the Diabolians, there is warfare. And never will there cease to be this warfare going on in the soul. For as long as we are this side of heaven, we will be engaged in this warfare. There is no such thing. I mean, surely we could agree without lifting him to unwarranted levels. We would agree that Paul the Apostle to the Gentiles was surely a man who reached one of the highest levels of sanctification of any man that has ever lived before or since. He was transported at one point up to the third heaven and truly was a man, we might say freely, a man greatly sanctified. And yet, he spoke of this warfare going on within himself all the way to the end of his journey. So, this is what's going on. Satan, the old tyrant, has gone back to Hellgate Hill, but even there, he continues to condole his misfortune and to consider what he might do to re-engage his warfare against Mansoul. Bunyan says, "Wherefore they presently call a council to contrive yet further what was to be done against the famous town of Mansoul. For their yarding pouches could not wait to see the result of their Lord Lucifer's and their Lord Apollyon's council that they had given before. For their raging gorge thought every day, even as long as a short forever, they thought that every day seemed to them to be as long as a short forever, until they were filled with the body and soul, with the flesh and bones, with the delicates of man's soul. They will not tire. They will not lose their appetite. They will not give up. They will not stop pursuing to destroy man's soul. They therefore resolve to make another attempt upon the town of man's soul, and that by an army mixed and made up partly of doubters and partly of bloodmen. Now this is the first time this has appeared. A more particular account now take of both. That is, of doubters and of bloodmen. Mason said, the enemy, though cast out and often foiled, will not give up the contest, but rage the more. He finds still enough of evil in us to work upon. Oh, for a watchful, prayerful, believing spirit to resist him. He will not give up this war. The doubters are such as have their name from their nature, as well as from the land and the kingdom where they're born. Their nature is to put a question upon every one of the truths of Emmanuel. Doubting everything God says. Their country is called the land of doubting, and that land lieth off and furthest remote to the north, between the land of darkness and that called the valley of the shadow of death. For though the land of darkness and that called the valley of the shadow of death be sometimes called as if they were one and the selfsame place, yet indeed they are two, lying but a little way asunder, and the land of doubting points in and lieth between them. This is the land of doubting. And these that came with Diabolus to ruin the town of man's soul are the natives of that country. Now, what say ye? After you've become a Christian, Satan has been dislodged. We use that term. Dislodged and removed. The city of the soul has been turned back over to Emmanuel. He's been welcomed at the gates with great rejoicing. He's taken up his place in the castle. All this is done. All this is achieved. Will the soul continue to struggle with doubting? According to our theologian, Mr. Bunyan, oh yes, these doubters have not given up, will not cease. There is a teaching afoot in our day, and I'm sure has been forever, but it's certainly predominant these days, that once you vote for Jesus, check the box, agree with God about his son, that it's over. That's the end of it. That's the end. You don't have to think about these things anymore. You don't have to worry about these things anymore. You should never question again. Everything is all as well. It has to be. Because you voted. You cast your ballot for Jesus. So that should settle the whole matter. But the reality is that Apollyon will not cease in his desire to destroy man's soul. And he will not cease. And he will not cease using these fellows right here. Doubters. It's one weapon. He'll never relinquish that weapon. It may be used more effectively against some than others because of a man's own constitution or his own experience or all those things. But to one degree or another, this war will never end. This doubting problem of doubting. Doubting the Lord. Doubting His Word. Every word He's ever said. Then Bunyan goes on and says, the bloodmen, now we're going to talk about them. Who are they? What are they? The bloodmen are people that have their name derived from the malignity of their nature. From the fury that is in them to execute it upon the town of man's soul. Their land lieth between the Dog Star, and by that they are governed as to their intellectuals. The name of their country is the province of Loathgood. The remote parts of it are far distant from the land of doubting, yet they do both butt and bound upon the hill called Hellgate Hill. These people are always in league with the doubters, for they jointly do make question of the faith and fidelity of the men of the town of Mansoul, and so are both alike qualified for the service of their prince, which is Diabolus, Napoleon. So these are vicious. These are not subtle at all. These are those that would execute violence against the town of Mansoul. And that without shame. And they are in league with the doubters. Although Bunyan makes it very clear, these are separate things, separate peoples, and they dwell in separate lands. They dwell in a land called Loathe Good, Hates Goodness. Now, of these two countries, did Diabolus, by the beating of his drum, raise another army against the town of Mansoul, of 520,000 strong. 25,000 men he raised from these two places. These doubters and these bloodmen. There were 10,000 doubters and 15,000 bloodmen. And they were put under several captains for the war, and old incredulity was again made general of the army. As for the doubters, their captains were 5 of the 7 that were heads of the last Diabolian army, and their names are, these are their names, Captain Beelzebub, Captain Lucifer, Captain Apollyon, Captain Legion, and Captain Cerberus. And the captains that they had before were some of them made lieutenants and some ensigns of the army. And of course you'll recognize readily that every one of these names is just a different name for Satan. But Diabolus did not count that in this expedition of his, did not count that these doubters would prove his principal men. For their manhood had been tried before. Also the Mansoulians had put them to the worst. Only he did bring them to multiply a number and to help, if need was, at a pinch. But his trust he put in his bloodmen, for that they were all rugged villains, and he knew that they had done feats heretofore. So now, Satan has raised this army, 25,000 altogether, 10,000 doubters, 15,000 bloodlust. He is not counting on the doubters to be his principal force. They're there to help, if they can, and if need be. He's counting on these bloodmen. As for the bloodmen, they also were under command. The names of their captains were Captain Cain, Captain Nimrod, Captain Ishmael, Captain Esau, Captain Saul, Captain Absalom, Captain Judas, and of course, Bunyan couldn't leave out Captain Pope. He just couldn't resist. And then he breaks down these men. Captain Cain was over two men, namely the zealous and the angry blood men. His standard bearer bare the red colors, and his scutcheon was the murdering club. Of course, these are all descriptions, of course, of Cain in the Bible. The second was Nimrod, captain over two bands, namely the tyrannical and encroaching bloodman. His standard bearer bare the red colors, and his scutcheon was the great bloodhound. Captain Ishmael was captain over two bands, namely the mocking and scorning bloodman. His standard bearer bare the red colors, and his scutcheon was one mocking and Abraham's Isaac. Captain Esau was captain over two bands, namely the bloodman that grudged that another should have the blessing. Also over the bloodman that are for executing their private revenge upon others. His standard bearer bare the red colors, and his scutcheon was one privately lurking to murder Jacob. Then Captain Saul. He was captain over two bands, namely the groundless jealousy and the devilishly furious blood. His standard bearer bare the red colors, and his scutcheon was three bloody darts cast at harmless David. Captain Absalom was captain over two bands, namely over the bloodman that would kill a father or a friend for the glory of this world. Also over those bloodmen that will hold one fair in hand with words till they shall have pierced him with their swords. His standard bearer will bear the red colors, and his scutcheon was the son pursuing the father's blood. Captain Judas was over two bands, namely the bloodman that will sell a man's life for money, and those also that will betray their friend with a kiss. His standard bearer bear the red colors, and his scutcheon was 30 pieces of silver and the halter. And then Captain Pope was captain over one man. For all these spirits are joined in one under him. His standard bearer bare the red colors, and his scutcheon was the stake, the flame, and the good man in it. Now he only was captain over one man for this reason. Note it. For all these spirits are joined in one unto him. Wow. That's quite an indictment. Quite an indictment. Murder said the bloodman, for bloody men, so-called, the author seems to intend persecutors. Men under the power of that carnal mind, which is enmity against God and against His image in the soul of other men. Here is a new set of enemies arise and may signify that opposition to religion which more or less every Christian must expect, for they who live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. He says they represent the persecutors. Our commentator on this section has wonderful things to say. Going back to the beginning of the chapter, he says this new device of Satan means the enterprise of persecution and the wrath of persecutors. Having tried the power and efficacy of doubt against the soul, he would now bring the power of persecution against the body to see whether the external agency of fire, sword, and faggot might not prove more efficacious than the internal exercise and struggle of the soul against an army of doubt. Persecution is generally the last resort of a bad cause. That's a wonderful quote right there. Persecution is generally the last resort of a bad cause. When men have resisted arguments and entreaties and have stood firm against all the efforts that address themselves to the reason and understanding or the feelings, then it is that the secular arm is put forth and the hand of power is laid to the hilt of the sword, and right is opposed and antagonized by might. I thoroughly believe that is the next step in American life. There will come persecution unless we have, as I quoted from our dear brother Davies this morning, unless we have a general repentance and reformation, I fully expect we will learn something of the powers that be opposing right with might. So was it in the days of the Reformation, and so we must with sorrow confess it continued in a measure to be, even in the latter age when Bunyan lived. The doubting and oft-despairing Bunyan was also the afflicted and oft-persecuted Bunyan. Such persecution as his pilgrim heroes suffered in Vanity Fair is here introduced as part of the trial and probation of man's soul, imprisonment, and death. And not unfrequently has the power of bodily persecution brought the man to a breakdown, who has boldly held on to his protest in the face of spiritual assaults. So on this occasion, after doubt has been repelled, is the weapon of persecution tried. This particular phase of the soul's peril is as clearly and elaborately developed by Bunyan's pen as any other of his inimitable descriptions. For example, the names of the captains of the Army of the Bloodmen are suggestive, embodying those names which are in Scripture or in human history associated with rapine, hatred, and bloodshed, such as Cain, who slew his brother, the first martyr to the witness of truth. Nimrod, the mighty hunter, beginning of those of whose kingdom was Babel, commenced in presumption, and ended in confusion. Ishmael, the scorner of the seed, the vagrant of the desert, a man of blood, his hand against every man, and every man's hand against him. Esau, who hated his brother and thirsted for his blood, Saul with his malice and envy against David, the chosen of the Lord, Absalom, the type of those men who would persecute even their own flesh, recognizing no tie of affection, no claim of relationship, no bond of brotherhood or sonship. Judas, with the blood money of the traitor who sold his master, and Pope, Pope, well worthy of a place amid the chief persecutors and well described by the device upon the escutcheon of his standard bearer, the stake, the flame, and the good man in it. Pope. Well, these are those that have been chosen, bloodmen. And the purpose, their purpose, is to get man's soul to recant, to defect, if you want to use that word, to apostatize from the Christ, who has at this point taken back up his residence in the castle. So Satan begins to amass this great army again. And I cannot help but continue to remind you to point it out to you, bring it to your heart. Satan will not give up. He will not quit. He will amass one army after another army. And if one army doesn't work, which the doubters were unsuccessful and routed, then he'll amass another one. Bloodman. Something, anything, to bring about to you, your heart, to desert the Lord's Christ. Any mechanism he can use. And the battle never ceases. The oldest saint that you could ever read about has testified in days gone by of the battle right up to the end. Any questions or comments on the reading today? Blessed in this nation that we, I think, have been lulled into a sleep as Christians to think that no such thing could ever happen to us. And that is a deadly sleep. Because I can assure you there are forces afoot right now today that would stamp out every vestige of Christian heritage from this nation if they could. And they are becoming more and more powerful and getting closer and closer, in my opinion, to being able to do it. We have a generation now who has no heritage, has not inherited the legacy that those of us who are older possess. They know nothing of it. They have heard nothing of it. I said to the men in the jail this morning, I never really thought about it. It just came out, and I heard myself say it because I happened to have all young men in front of me this morning. And I made the statement to them, you think that the world you're living in has been like this forever. This is the only world because it's the only world you've ever known. You think it's always been like it is. And you don't know that the world you're living in is a novelty, a strange novelty. And it has not been so. But I think of that more every day in the week because I have so much exposure to young people, teenagers and high schoolers and so forth. They literally have no idea of any world but the little electronic world they're living in. They have no idea. No context, no frame of reference whatsoever. And that is frightening, because they will be the governors, senators, congressmen, statesmen of the future. And that's frightening. Persecution could be just around the corner for us. Any questions or comments about the reading today?